Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a chopper, and I love films. As William Blake once said, the road to excess leads to the palace of wisdom. Babylon was wildly underrated. I agree, Mr. Blake. Nice one. Yeah, good point. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, Jamila Jamil, and even Bed Ambles. But this week, it's the brilliant actor and, come on, I'll say it, national treasure. It's Mr. Eddie Marzan. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Eddie. We talk secrets. We go deep. We talk about beginnings. We talk about how it all ends. You also get the whole episode uncut, ad-free, and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So Eddie Marzan is an incredible actor. You know him from everything you've ever seen that you've loved. He's in everything. And he's brilliant in everything. He's one of the great actors of our time. I'd never met him before. We recorded this on Zoom the other day. What a fucking delight. He was a joy. I really think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 286 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a world's ender, a gangster number one, a V for Vendetta, a Hancocker, a Sherlock Holmeser, a Warhorser, a Deadpool 2er, a Ray Donovaner, a Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norriller. I can't keep going. I will never get to the podcast if I list off all his achievements. He's one of the most extraordinary actors. He's worked more than anyone you've ever met in your life. He's in everything. He's brilliant in everything. He's different in everything. He's a fucking superstar. I can't believe he's here. Can you believe he's here? He really is. Please welcome to the show. He's here right now. It's Eddie Marzan.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks very much. Can I record that? Can I play that every morning?
You can make that your ringtone, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eddie, the greatest news, this is the first time we're meeting, but you're a Spurs fan, so
Yeah, we just won. I think we scored in the 95th minute or something.
It's very exciting. God, it was exciting. I didn't believe, which is, you know, it's the hope that kills you. I didn't believe it, then it happened. Couldn't believe it. It's lovely to see you. You are, I mean, you're quite a... There's not many people like you, is there, Eddie? Like, you're really an extraordinary actor who is in fucking everything, always working, always completely different in everything. You're massively respected and loved, and I think you always have been. And I don't think there's many people like that. you haven't had like a sort of up and down career where people are like, you know what I mean? Like, I think you're basically a national treasure is what you are. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I knew early on, I knew at drama school, all the good-looking kids, if you're doing a check-off, all the good-looking kids were playing the sexy bloke who shoots himself at the end. And I was playing like Udi Nitti Abobolikov, who was like the old man or something. So they used to call me Captain Velcro at drama school because I used to play all the small parts. Right. So I kind of knew that was going to be my, if I was going to make a career of this, that no one was going to ask me to be, basically because women don't want to fuck me and men don't want to be me. So you don't employ me. So you better employ me to be someone else. And that's what I sort of worked out, really. That's only in film. I mean, in real life, I mean, women want to fuck me all the time.
In real life, you're unstoppable.
Oh, it's just, I'm fighting them off in real life.
I've heard the stories. You're fighting them off, men trying to kill you to take your place. Listen. No, I cannot agree with anything you've just said, but that is interesting. Like, what is it, if I may, given the position you're in, I'm always interested in, because often in early parts, I've been asked it, and I always think it's such a funny question when you do, like, one of your first big jobs and people say, like, what attracted you to the role? And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, there was a choice, you know what I mean? Like, there were 300 scripts to choose from.
Yeah.
But you are in the position, I believe, where you get offered lots of things. Nowadays, what gets you like, oh, fuck, I've got to do this? Like, what is it? If it isn't a big paycheck or whatever it is, like, oh, I really like this thing.
I think I've got four kids. I've got four teenagers. So I think family's a big something to worry about. I think it's whether I can come home. I mean, I used to do a job in LA. I used to do Ray Donovan, and they used to allow me to come home every weekend. So I used to commute from LA to London every week. I think what I try and do is I try and make sure that the thing I do is completely different to the last thing I did. I try and mix it up all the time because I hate to be defined. I can't stand people defining me. When I first started acting, all I could get was Prime Monthly or The Bill because I come from the East End. All they ever thought of me of was being a thief or a mugger and not even a successful. My old man used to say, well, I don't mind you being a thief, but why have you got to be such a shit one? Because you're always nicked. So, and I knew I didn't want to be a professional cockney. I wanted to be an actor. I think there's other people that do that better than me. So I went back to voice coaches and movement coaches and I just wanted to be as diverse as possible, really. Yeah. But I think that that's been, to a certain extent, it's been to the detriment of my career as well, because it means I've never exploded. Do you know what I mean? I've never had that big launch. I've never had one thing that made me a hit. I've always been that guy. I'm a go-to guy. In America, I remember once working in America on one of the early seasons of Ray Donovan, and there was this old actor. We were shooting in Culver City, and there was an old actor. I forget his name now, but he came on set. We were filming near his house, and he came up to me. He said, "You're a donut actor." And I said, "What the fuck's a donut actor?" And he said, "Well, in America, a donut is a ring donut." And he said, "What happens is this industry can't afford to have someone come to the fore of their own volition. They have to have money invested in the next big thing. So what they do is they invest in someone, and then they surround them with good actors." Good character actors, so they make the investment look like a better actor. So the middle, the center of the donut is vacuous, but the actual donut is the sugary, the bit of stodge around the ring. He said, and that's what a donut actor is, and that's what you are. And if you look at a lot of Hollywood actors, big stars, early on, they're surrounded by great character actors. And that's what he said, that's what you are.
That's fucking fascinating. So it's a massive compliment. There is that thing in the old, like, studio system in the old films, they used to do a big thing where the star of the film doesn't appear in the film for about 20 minutes. They're talked about a lot.
Yeah,
the character is talked about, so it's built up. So when they appear, you're like, oh, wow, they're finally here.
But
the reality is it's just been donut actors for 20 minutes.
Building the plot up, carrying the water. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you say you haven't exploded. I could be wrong because obviously I know you and I'm a big fan, but like, you're very well known, aren't you? You must get recognised all the time in your life.
Yeah, no, I am because I work all the time. I mean, one of the things that I think has helped me is because I have a career in America and a career in the UK, like you do now. Mm. And what that means is that someone always wants you somewhere. you know, and actually America has a much more, is open to a much more diverse casting of me than Britain ever was.
Yeah.
Now it's changing, but you know, initially I had to go to America to be diverse. In Britain, we had a very, very fixed idea of what I should be. Did you find that?
Listen, I mean, I don't want to, I'm always wary of, but yes, I completely found that. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. So many actors come to America to actually get work. I mean, in England, before I made my own things, I was only being asked to audition for parts of terrorists because of my
family. Yeah.
And it was like, oh, and I kept thinking, I don't want to play terrorists. This isn't what I want to do. And that was all that was coming in. And it was like, oh, yeah, I've probably got to make my own stuff to.
Yeah, show. That's what you have to do. You have to do something to kind of to change it up a little bit, don't you?
Mm.
You know, and there's nothing more soul destroying than people having that fixed idea. I found it exhausting and really soul destroying when people had a very fixed idea of me. And it was the wrong idea. It was based on a prejudice. And you kind of think, it's got fucking to do with what I really am, you know? Yeah.
It's very interesting to be in. I fucking hate being put in a box. I hate it. And I don't know if everyone feels that way or if some people are comfortable. Like, I think there are some movie stars that, and I could be wrong, maybe they're very frustrated, but where you go like, yeah, you've got your thing, you figured your thing and you can keep playing those notes. And they're good. They're good notes. And it's nice to see you in that. You know what I mean? But
They
probably go to sleep at night going, get me out of this box.
yeah. They probably want to do what we do.
Eddie, I've forgotten to tell you something and I feel sick about it. I feel sick that I haven't told you this up top. I should have done it, I forgot. But you've died, you're dead.
Fuck, have I?
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd say you've had a good run. You've done so much.
Yeah.
Your CV alone is extraordinary, you know. 4 kids, sounds like, you know, not bad, is it?
How
did you die?
Hopefully making love to my wife. Well, that's quite assault. So I'm making love to my wife, I think. That'd be a great way to go, I think.
God, that's wonderful.
Because the other thing is she probably wouldn't notice for about half an hour. She's terrible. If she can't sleep, she wakes me up and she says, tell me about your career. Talk about your career again. And I start talking about my career and she goes off to sleep. It gets off to sleep. Some people listen to podcasts. My wife wakes me up and says, tell me about your career.
That's so funny. Well, she can listen to this podcast and it'll get a write-off.
Yeah.
So you're making love to your wife and you die. Yeah. And she doesn't notice for about 30 minutes.
No, she'll probably notice because, you know, some people, when with their sex life, they have loads of things like swings and whips and all that. I mean, my pre-planning is to finish just as Match of the Day theme starts. Then I've got it down to a T, really. So she'll probably notice when Match of the Day comes on and my eyes and I'm not responding, she'll probably realise I'm gone then.
Just to check for your wife, she's going to be... It's going to be slightly traumatic, is it? Or is she going to be like, she'll just roll it?
He went out with a smile on his face.
Yeah, he seems happy. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lovely way to go for you. Do you have a chosen age for this to happen?
No, anytime, really. I've got no control over it, really.
No. Well, do you worry about death? Sounds like you don't. Do you?
Looking after the kids, I think, my wife and kids, making sure they're okay. I think doing that and nothing else really. No, my life has gone far beyond what the expectations were, far beyond the expectations. So I'm quite happy.
I haven't asked this question in a while, but given all that you've done, do you care or think about legacy? Do you care, like, I want my films to live on, you know what I mean? Do you care, or are you like, I'm dead, it doesn't matter, nothing matters?
No, I won't even think about it. I won't be aware of it. I don't believe in you know, you don't have any consciousness. I mean, I don't remember what it was like before I was alive, and I won't know what it's like when I'm gone. You know, I don't worry about that. I mean, talk about legacy. One of the things that inspired me was the story of Claude Rains, the old Hollywood actor, the character actor, who actually came from Clapham and had a very, very rough London accent and had to get it that kind of worked out of him and went over to Hollywood and became this brilliant character actor. But actually, he's a real Londoner, working class London boy.
I'd
love people to think of me the way they thought of Claude Rains, and that he transcended people's idea of him. I think that would be something I'd like, really.
That's so interesting. Can I ask you a question? When you were commuting from LA to London to see your family every week, what are you doing, right? How did you survive? What's your jet lag secret?
Exercise, running. As soon as you land, when I was doing Ray Donovan, because I was playing a boxing trainer, they gave me a guy called Bob Garcia, who works out of Malibu now, I think. And we used to go to the wild card gym. There's two wild card gyms, one in Hollywood and one in Santa Monica. We used to go to the Santa Monica. And also Robert Downey Jr. Has a gym in LA, a secret gym that he would let me use. And so I would literally get up like 3-4 o'clock in the morning and go to the gym and work really hard. Because what I found was that if you got physically tired, that overcame the jet lag. Do you know what I mean? That helped you become, if you became physically tired in that geographical time and space, then that helped.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you think there's no afterlife, nothing, dead?
No, that's it. No, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I got news for you, Eddie. You're wrong. And the people, there's a heaven and they're very annoyed with you for not thinking there would be anything. And they're like, surprise. And you turn up and you're like, what? I thought I was going to be asleep. And they're like, no.
Yeah.
It carries on. And you're welcome there in heaven. It's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Oh, I think films. I do love films.
Well, then you've come to the right place because there's fucking cinemas everywhere. Yeah. What's your perfect cinema setup? Do you like them cinemas with the recliners and the meal?
Yeah, and the glass of red wine. Me and my wife sitting there watching a really good film. Lovely, fantastic. Mind you, I'll probably fall asleep about 10 minutes into it.
Yeah, that's why I don't like them cinemas. I didn't come here for a nap.
Mind you, I used to get a lot of sleep when I used to take the kids to see kids' films and sit and then give them a load of sweets and then they'd all sit there and then I'd be off. But they'd have to nudge me because I snore. But I used to catch up on my sleep by taking them to see kids' films. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, so you've come to heaven. They're very happy to see you. They're big fans. They want to talk to you about your life. They want to talk about your life through films. And the first thing they ask you, what is the first film you remember seeing, Eddie?
I think the first film, I think it was at home. I think it probably something like Jason and the Argonauts or something like that. It was such a film. It was such an...
Nice.
I think it was something that completely took my attention. It's probably what kids get when they play video games now. For me, it was just amazing to see these monsters and all these heroes and stuff, you know. I think Jason and the Argonauts was probably the first film I saw. Yeah.
What a fucking...
That I remember seeing.
And you watched that at home? That was like on TV?
Yeah, on TV. I mean, the first film I was going to the cinema to see... I remember my parents took us to see the cartoon of Robin Hood. And I remember going in the afternoon and it was sunny and coming out and it was dark. And I was blown away by the fact that the sun had gone down while we were in the cinema. Yeah. But the first film I really remember being excited about and thinking what's going on, what is this thing, was Jason and the Argonauts. Yeah.
Do you remember thinking, I want to be part of that? Or you just like... Just loved it as a thing.
No, I didn't. I had no idea I wanted to be part of it. I was just blown away by the story and the special effects.
What about being scared? What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
Yeah, it was The Road. You know, the one with Viggo Mortensen. Yeah.
Oh, fuck it.
That terrified me. It's funny enough, I was doing a film with Ethan Hawke in, I think we were in Nova Scotia, and he wanted to go and see it. I wasn't that bothered. He said, please, I'm going to see this film. He's a real connoisseur, Ethan. So he said, come on, we're going to see this film. I said, right. And I sat with him. And he put his head in his hands the whole fucking film. He put his hands over his eyes. He couldn't watch it. He was so terrified. And I was sitting there shitting myself, but watched it. And I remember thinking, what the fuck? You put me to watch this film. And you didn't even watch it. You just had your head, you know. But I found the dystopian post-apocalyptic world was terrifying. It was awful. When you see a mother and a child running and those blokes catch up to them and you know they're going to eat them. That's fucking... I found it really... disturbing film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking depressing.
Yeah.
That is a depressing film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what I don't know what happened that caused it. I don't think you know what happened. Yeah.
I don't think they ever tell you.
No.
Stuff happened.
Yeah.
So that's your big fear, is it? End of the world.
Yeah. I was terrified like when Putin invaded Ukraine.
Yeah.
I remember going to the theatre with my wife and sitting there thinking, oh God, this is I get really disturbed by things like that. Like the idea of Trump coming back fucking terrifies me. You know, I think, oh God. It just terrifies me. I get really disturbed by things like that. I've got to take a step back from it all sometimes.
How old are your children? Your children are all teenagers?
Yeah, 19, 18, 15, and 13.
Wow.
Mm.
Boys and girls?
One girl and three boys. The oldest is a daughter, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot to worry about.
Have you got kids?
No, I don't have kids.
You can have one of mine if you want. I've got fucking loads.
But I worry the one you'd give me would definitely be the worst one, and you know it.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you the cunt. Don't worry about it.
You wouldn't say, you'd say to them, like, oh, you're going off, we'll have a lovely time, honestly.
They love LA. They love LA. They love LA. They spent their summers in LA when we were doing Ray Donald.
I've been calling you. This one's a dud. He sent me a dud.
Yeah.
It don't do anything. what's the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
Yeah, I cry for weird things. The weirdest thing I ever cried for, when we had our first baby, and I sat up one night feeding it, like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I think Jordan got married to Peter Andre, and I cried watching the wedding.
It was moving. It was moving. It was the wedding of our time. You're right.
It was, yeah. Now, I think the film that
she
made
was
me
in
cry
a big
was,
Disney carriage.
I don't know what it was. It was like the Posh and Becks of 10 years later, wasn't it? Kind of thing, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. The film that made me cry, I think, the most was Schindler's List. That was the film that I got most disturbed about. I think the little girl in the red coat, and also the little boy when he hides in the toilet, and the other kids tell him he can't be there, and he's thinking, poor little fucker, he can't even be there. They won't even let him stay there. That was the most disturbing thing for me. Really. That upset me the most.
What is the film that you love? People don't like it. It is not critically acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally.
Carry On Screaming, I think. Carry On Screaming, I think, is fantastic.
Tell me about, I think I haven't seen that one. Tell me about Carry On Screaming.
It's with Harry H. Corbett and Prunella Fielding. It's just a Carry On film, and it's based on basically horror movies. It's based on the Hammer horror movies, and it's probably the best one, I think. That or the Carrying Up the Jungle, and it's just fantastic. You know, it's just brilliant. I mean, people turn into werewolves, and there's a mummy, and there's like a Dracula figure. Kenneth Williams is like he's like a Dracula, mad scientist. It's just brilliant. It's so camp, but it's great. And I think it's the one that I could watch all the time. And I'm not supposed to. I should be more of a connoisseur, but I'm not. I just love Carrying On Screaming. Yeah.
I forget about the Carry On films.
Oh, right. I love the Carry On films. Love them.
Carry On Cleo, the best one?
I think, I don't know. My favourite gag is in Carry On Up Jungle, where Silver Sims asks, is it Silver Sims? She asks, they're going to go see the monkeys and it's mating season. And she says to me, if I throw monkeys, do you think they'll come? And he said, would you? And it's just great, great comic time. I just love it. I love those gags. I'm a real gag merchant. I love it. I do love a gag. I do. Nice. I'm very old-fashioned in my humour.
You haven't done a lot of comedy, have you?
No, I did early on. And then it just went a bit. I think certain roles push you in a certain direction. I think happy-go-lucky pushed me into the mad conspiracy theorist thing. And then other roles have sent me in other ways. No, I'd love to do more comedy, actually. I do like comedy.
Good to know.
Yeah, very much.
Interesting. Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
What is the film that you used to love, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, no, I don't like this anymore?
The last two seasons of Ray Donovan were in New York rather than LA. So we rented a house in Long Island, me and my wife and the kids. And Long Island is kind of like these towns. We were in a place called Sag Harbor, but around there are like these villages. And it's a bit like Amityville Horror, you know, those kind of houses. And we were trying to tell my kids, they were already young, and we were telling them about great horror movies. And me and my wife told them about Silence of the Lambs. And we watched it, and they were like totally not scared at all.
Really?
And when I watched it with them, I remember thinking, actually, it's quite a bit of a TV movie, really. It's not as good as I thought it was. I think the performances are amazing, but the actual filmmaking, I didn't feel that great. So we felt defeated, me and my wife. So, I mean, I think they could have called social services on us because what we did was, but there's an other one we showed them The Exorcist. We showed them The Exorcist. They were terrified and they were traumatized. And me and my wife went, yes, get in there.
Oh, that didn't fuck you up. Well, okay, well, hang on.
I'm really going to fuck you up now, yeah.
You're there all weekend. All right.
They got another one. Yeah.
That's fucking funny. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is good, but the experience you had seeing it will always make it special to you.
I was once dumped. I was once brokenhearted and dumped by... She was a girl I went to drama school with, and she's now a well-known actress. But she left me for a trumpet player. But I lost out to the brass section. So, and I remember sitting out watching When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, and that was really, it was on my own. I was just me and my bulldog at the time, sitting there watching it. And I remember thinking, life goes on. You just hang around and life goes on. And I remember that film gave me kind of hope that life goes on, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah.
What is the film that you most relate to? What do you most relate to?
Well, the film that I think the Long Good Friday was the first time I heard someone speak with a voice that I recognised, I think. I think when I saw Bob Hoskins on screen and the way you used to hear people do swear or do London accents or to play gangster movies, but they always sounded fake. And when I first heard Bob Hoskins, I remember thinking, that sounds like my old man. You know, that sounds like the men on our council estate. That's it. He's got it right.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that and thinking, you know, that was the first time I heard my voice on screen and I saw the mannerisms that I identified with. Yeah.
Given that you've worked with everyone. Is there someone you've worked with that you were like a huge fan of and went, and then you did get to work with them and it was a great, you don't have to tell me a negative story, but like, have you worked with someone that you really looked up to that was a big star to you that you ended up doing something with?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we did Gangs of New York, I spent 9 months with Jim Broadbent. I was like his sidekick. I mean, I've ended up with two lines in the film. My storyline got cut, but they put me with the first day, they told me to go have lunch with Jim Broadbent. And it was just a brilliant learning curve being with him for 9 months on set. And we became great friends and we had such a laugh. And it's funny because Stephen Graham spent time with Leonardo, and him and Leonardo became great friends. And I don't really, I don't know Leonardo. I never spent much time with him, but me and Jim just became really, really good mates. You know, there was a funny one day we were playing football, and I was in goal. And we were doing free kicks, just playing free kicks, and no one could beat me. And all these actors, none of them could. I was keeping every shot out. And then they gave Jim a go, and he was the only one who scored, and everyone jumped in and mobbed him when he scored. Yeah, that was the first time I was a big fan of his, and I learned how to be not only behave on a film set, but kind of keep your powder dry, you know, kind of keep, because I was there with Daniel Day-Lewis, and Daniel was always in character and was always Bill the Butcher, and that was. And it seemed exhausting. And I watched Jim, and Jim was like, would always keep very calm and very polite to everybody, but also was always ready when he needed to be. You could tell he was always spinning plates, but very quietly and without much fuss. And I remember watching him and thinking that's the way to do it, because it was just inspiration.
So can I ask you, and maybe you're not allowed to talk about it, I don't know, with Daniel Day, I've always wondered, with Daniel Day-Lewis being in character, does that mean he's like getting food at lunch being horrible?
No, it's not. He's not like that at all. Actually, a lot of people think that it's not. I mean, we would talk to him. He would basically what he does. I did the same thing when we did Ray Donovan with the Parkinson's. So what he does is he keeps the physical aspects of the character, the voice, the mannerisms. He keeps that on all the time. Because when the camera rolls, he wants it to be spontaneous. But I would literally sit there and read an article in The Guardian and say, what do you think about this article? And yeah, you call him Bill, not Dan, you know. Right. And he'd talk about anything with him.
Okay.
And it was always polite. But what he was doing was keeping that physical side of the character running. So when the camera rolled, it was on the ball. And when we did Ray Donovan and I did the Parkinson's, I used to have to keep that going so that when you saw it didn't look like I was acting, you know.
Yeah.
But the worst thing about Ray Donovan was, it's like you got me here, the camera, so the edge of frame is here. The thing is, you have to have the shake. Like, I have to have the shake there on Parkinson. Because if you have the shake there, you're just wanking. The whole thing. When I auditioned for Ray Donovan, I auditioned on a Sunday night, and I taped it, and I showed it to my wife, and she made me go back and do it again. She goes, you're just knocking one out. Because I was a diet.
Eddie.
It was terrible. I had to ask every director to tell me the edge of frame. You'd have to like lean,
right,
and do something because they have to see the shape, but they can't. It can't be below the edge of frame because it looks obscene.
Do you have a especially in your early years when you're turning up on a film where you're not a lead, where you're a smaller part, and you're coming in to do a week or something, and the film's already going and.
Yeah.
Do you have a system of like day one, how you greet, you know, do you introduce yourself to everyone? Do you say hello to everyone? Like, do you have a way? Because so much of it's like social and how you deal with the crews and the everyone. Like, do you have a, is it just you play it by ear, see what the vibe is, or do you have a system?
Yeah. I mean, I had a great teacher. I had a Russian guy called Sam Kogan. Who used to study with the Moscow Arts Theatre, and he knew that I wasn't academic. I mean, I left school at 15, and I've got no academic qualification. So anything cerebral, I've always struggled with, language or whatever. But there's something very visceral visual music or you know, sensory. I can, that's the way I work. And he said to me once, he said, I'm going to teach you to act like a mechanic. He said, because if your car breaks down, no matter if it's snowing, raining, sunny weather, whatever, a mechanic will open up a box and will fix your car. And he said, I'm going to teach you to act like that. So no matter where you turn up on set, no matter what's going on, you're going to turn up and do your job. And he gave me a technique. Oh, yeah. And that technique is what has enabled me to, regardless of what's going on, to just turn up and do my job. I think also having children helps as well, because family life became so important. You don't get emotional strokes at work. You don't go to work to seek belonging. You just go to work to work. And that enables you to be much more polite, because you don't need anything from anybody. Mm-hmm. And if you don't need anything from anybody, you can be kind. If you go to work and you've got to belong, or people have got to tell you how wonderful you are, you're in trouble, really. You know, it's best to just turn up and do the job.
Fascinating. What's the technique?
He ran an academy called the Science of Acting, and I studied with him. There's like a 10-step thing that he does that I've always kind of used. Really, it's very fascinating. I think other people use it. It's what you do spontaneously. What he did was he looked at what good actors do and tried to show you what they do. It's not cultish. Or anything. He just said this is what good acting is, and you just do it. You know?
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah. Mm. Fascinating. What a world. What a life. What is the sexiest film you've ever seen, Eddie Murphy?
Oh, I used to love the Hammer House of Horror vampire films. You know, those women with heaving cleavages just before he bit their neck. I used to love them. I mean, that was my, like, you know, that was when I was becoming sexually aware. I used to watch that film. It's amazing, you know, that kind of thing. I don't like gratuitous. I'd rather the suggestion than the actual thing, you know. So, you know, like, and also like that Polanski film, The Dance of the Vampires, or well, I don't know where else.
Oh, The Fearless Vampire Killers?
Yeah, The Fearless Vampire Killers. It's got two titles for some reason.
Yeah, that's right.
But Sharon Tate in that is absolutely gorgeous, isn't she?
Yeah. You know,
that kind of, there's something about vampire. Apparently, vampire films always come into fashion whenever society is more prudish. Whenever society, it's vampire, because it's a subconscious approaching sexuality in a different way, you know. Apparently, when Bush was in power and America was becoming more, slightly more puritanical, that's when you got all those vampire movies coming out.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? I find that's
so interesting.
I also the Phyllis Vampire Killers, because my favourite vampire is Alfie Bass. He came from Bethnal Green, so my nan kind of knew his family, and he came from Bethnal Green. He was like a hero of mine when I was a kid. They should tell me about Alfie Bass, and especially when I started acting, a lot of the older people say, "Oh, you've got to be the next Alfie Bass." I don't know. Brilliant actor, but he's great in that film. Yeah, I'll take that.
There's a subcategory. The subcategory is troubling boners, worrying why don'ts. A film you found arousing you weren't sure you should. I don't want to ask this question, but I have to. It's the podcast.
No. I don't know, probably Bambi or something.
Thumper? Which part?
Thumper. Yeah. Thumper, very big one.
Yeah, Thumper, lovely. Yeah, you seen Thumper? Lovely. Fucking hell. Lovely bit of Thumper. Showing that to your kids. You don't find this sexy? Let me try this. You see Bambi? Okay. What is objectively the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite, but it is the best of cinema.
Ooh, I would probably say it would either be Jean de Florey, I think. I loved Jean de Florey. I thought that was an amazing film. But the other one, I think, and this is actually one of the earliest films that I remember seeing, was The Night of the Hunter. I think The Night of the Hunter is an amazing film. Amazing film.
You know what? Neither of those films have ever come up in all the episodes of this podcast. That is an excellent show.
Yeah, I think if I'm, my favourite film is The Godfather, but you told me not to mention that, because everyone
knows. I fucking told you. I told you.
But I do think Night of the Hunter is an amazing film, and I do think Jean de Florette is an amazing. I mean, Daniel Auteuil in Jean de Florette, the acting is fucking amazing. It's just wonderful. The story and the twist at the end and everything, brilliant.
Well, great shout! You're very good at this, Eddie.
Am I?
Yeah, you're actually scoring quite high at a lot of points. I haven't told you the story.
Is there a point
scoring? Sometimes. And let me tell you, you've got about 195,000, which is pretty good. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Probably The Life of Brian, I think, probably.
Oh, what a cracker. It's so good, The Life of Brian.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. So funny. I mean, some of the gags are just amazing.
It's so funny, but it's also so well made. Like, it's a properly...
Yeah.
It's a good film, and it has a good story. And, like, aside from the jokes, I'm like, that is a good film. And
yeah,
the ending
is...
I think the ending is genuinely profound. Like, I think it's deep. It's a fucking brilliant film, that is.
Yeah. I'm a member of the British Humanist Association, so I'm very... It's just the comment it makes about religion, not only about religion, but about belief systems, whether they be political, philosophical, religious, or whatever, and how we buy into them and how... I'm a great believer that all these belief systems are just ways of belonging, really. All of them. They're just ways of belonging. And we buy into it because it gives us a sense of identity, because it's more terrifying than realising that, as the Buddha said, there is no self, which I found fascinating in the sense that we're not a fixed thing. People want to fix themselves. They want to have a fixed sense of self as they want to hold on to something, you know. And I love the Life of Brian because it kind of takes all that apart, you know.
And you don't want to be put in a box. You don't like this fixed sense of self.
It's the word. It's almost traumatic to me if people try to define me. There was a fascinating discussion. David Harewood gave a talk, the Jonathan Dimbleby talk, and I was invited to go and listen to it, about being a black actor in Britain. And they told this story about, in his talk, he told this story about in the late 1950s, just after the Windrush, about 10 years after the first Windrush generation came over, and the BBC decided to do a live like play for today about Jamaican immigrants coming to London. But the people who were making the film, the people who were writing it, directing it, set dressing it, whatever, were white. But they got these Jamaican actors to come in and play these parts, you know. And there's a famous story about this young Jamaican actress came in, and she came into her bedroom, and it was messy and it was filthy. And they were going to start shooting live in about 15 minutes. And she said, "Why is this so dirty?" And they said, "Well, that's how you live." And she said, "That's not how I live." And so when they left, she in 15 minutes, she tidied the room up, cleaned it up. So when they shot it, it showed how she really lived. And I've found that in my career, that exact story has happened to me quite a few times, where someone's asked me to play someone from my background, and then you play it, and they show me the house that I'm living in or the clothes that I'm wearing, and they're filthy. And they're like, there's a need for people to infantilize us. There's a need for people to... I think it's there's something about creatives and this progressive creatives. There's a narcissistic element in them where they have to be the rescuer. And the people that they're making the film about are the victims, and they're going to rescue them. And if you're not a victim, then they can't be the hero of the story. Do you know what I mean? Oh, wow. And so there's and I've always pushed back against that. You know, I've always thought, I don't buy this. And that's one of the reasons why I've never wanted to be... I don't like people defining me, because you haven't got any idea of why, you know. I haven't got any fucking idea of why.
Well, yeah. Well, no, there are two things. One, I always think whenever I see like reality TV, there's like a thing that people always say on reality TV where they go like, "Yeah, well, that's me. That's me. You know me. That's me. That's what I'm like." And I always think, how do you know what you're... I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
I don't know who I am. How are you so sure?
All these
things. But then it's also, I think people are, everyone is so fucking complicated. It's much easier. It's like when you hear gossip and stuff. It's so, I think why like gossip is like fun for a second and then you feel awful. You feel depressed afterwards, is because it's like a dehumanization. It's like you get to go, oh, well, they're this. They're this.
We get exactly. Sort of,
we can minimize that person into, well, they're a bad guy or they're a good guy or they're... And then afterwards you feel empty because you know that's not true and you wouldn't want anyone talking about you in that way. And you go like, yeah, we're all fucking a million things and it's complicated. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? See, that's what I think populism is. That's what the rise of populism. Populism always demands an other to dehumanize. Yeah. It always does. And social media is terrible for that. Social media is fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
The way you cannot explore complex or nuanced ideas. It has to be a binary idea. And the more binary the idea is, the more followers you get. And, you know, and it's just, I found it exhausting. Absolutely.
That stuff terrifies me like the ride terrifies you. But it's,
yeah.
But I think it's all comes from insecurity that everyone is scared of their own, like, because the thought that you have expressed that everyone wants to belong and there is no belonging, we are all one consciousness and it's all one fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so unfathomable and scary that you go, can't we just make it that it's this? Can't we just make it that we're all one thing?
Can I be that and you be that?
Fuck. Eddie, I mean, the points are just racking up here, I gotta say. I don't like being negative. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
I went to LA. I was jet lagged in LA, and I was working. And I went to see The Passion of Christ, the Mel Gibson film.
Yes, I've seen that.
I remember I sat there and watched it, and there was this woman beside me, and she was quite a famous actress. I forget her name, but she started crying. She was getting all moved by it. And I watched it. And first of all, I thought, hold on a minute, it's really dependent on the idea that people know who Jesus is. That people have this belief system. Because it doesn't introduce it. It doesn't tell the story. It says, this is him. This is how he suffered for you. And I'm watching it thinking, this is awful. I'm never thinking, this is just like this. He suffered because of you.
Mm.
I mean, I remember watching it and literally thinking to myself, this is like a porno that goes straight to the country. I'm thinking, I don't get this.
It's two hours of a man being beaten up. Like, it's such a weird... If you take the context out of it and you go... If you knew nothing of religion, you go, do you want to watch this film? You'd watch that film and be like, why did you make me watch a man get beaten for 2 hours?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unless you understand the religious beliefs behind it. I remember, you know, I just watched it and thought, this doesn't make any sense to me. Because I didn't believe it. I thought, it's terrible.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Do you know this? I'm sure I've told this on the podcast before, but I think about this often. During the making of The Passion of the Christ, Jim Caviezel, if that's how you say it, is on the cross and he gets struck by lightning, not once, but 3 times. If that is not a sign that you should stop making this film, it's amazing to me they continued making the film. 3 times he got struck by lightning on the cross. God is talking to you. You should listen. You know what I mean?
We had me and Ben Chaplin with you. We were doing this film once, and we were laughing about what it's really like to make a film compared to what you see on screen.
Yeah,
like we imagine like because actors always want like a coffee or they want to, you know. And me, it's always I'll have a mocha, you know. So like you're playing Jesus, like so even if I was playing Jesus, like literally before you see this, and I'm up there on the cross, literally like this, you'd be like, you know, or like. If I was playing Robin Hood, I'd be like, you know, I'd be like,
he put some cinnamon on it.
And then you're back under the cross, you know? And that's what it's like in filmmaking, really. You know what I mean?
It's funny. I love when people come visit on set. They're like, I want to come visit on set. And I always like to time how long it takes till they realise how fucking boring it is.
Oh, I know. My kids used to come. And then they'd just go and get sweets from the craft server. And when we were doing Ray Donovan, they said, you can always tell when Eddie's kids turn up because the door to the studio is sticky because my kids have been having nothing but sweets. And also they used to nick, my two eldest used to nick little golfing buggies and drive around. And there was one AD who used to let them do, one AD was a bit of a stoner, he used to let them do everything. And the one AD who used to really get strict, no, you can't do that. But my kids used to drive around Culver City on their golf buggy.
That's fine. What is the film, you're funny and you should do more comedy. What is the film that made you laugh the most?
I think Animal House.
Okay.
Animal House. I think Blazing Saddles.
Wonderful.
And Stir Crazy. I think those were the ones I think. Yeah. But there is a film, there's a really funny film called Partners with John Hurt and Ryan O'Neill. It's set in the 80s where John Hurt is a gay cop and Ryan O'Neill becomes his partner. And they go on and they solve this case. And it's fucking hilarious.
I think
Stir Crazy was, I think those two together are just brilliant.
Those two.
You know, yeah, amazing.
Brilliant.
And it was directed by Sidney Poitier, wasn't it?
I believe you're right.
Yeah.
What a mad fact.
I know.
Fuck. Yeah. You get 20 points for that one. Fuck, Eddie. I think you might be in the lead.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
Eddie, you've got, let me just count this up, 791,540 points, which I think is one of the highest scores we've had on this. So congratulations, you've been amazing. However, your wife, as discussed, she's a bit of a salt. You were making love to her. You were making love to her just before match of the day. You usually timed it. So you timed it. You started 30 seconds before the match of the day. Thing kicked it. And at 23 seconds in, you start to think, oh, my heart on the other side is feeling a bit weird. And you died. You died, exploded in the spot. And your lovely wife rolled you off and went, shh, 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 football's on. And she lay back to watch the football. And after the match of the day, I was walking around with a coffin. You know what I'm like? I knock on the door and I go, hey, and one of your 14 kids answers the door. and I said, where's Eddie? They went, oh, he's upstairs making love to mum and watching us now. I said, oh, I'll come upstairs. You're dead. Your wife, I'm like, I'm sorry. She's like, no, don't worry about it. He seemed happy. Look at him, he's smiling. And you are grinning. And anyway. So with you, we get you in this coffin. I have to chop you up because there's more of you than I was expecting. I stuff you in the coffin. Coffin absolutely rammed. There's no room in this coffin. There's only enough room to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show in heaven when it is your movie night?
Oh gosh, The Godfather. It has to be.
The fucking Godfather.
It has to be. I mean, it's just an amazing film.
You could take it.
I haven't shown my kids yet. I'm saving it to show my kids.
Are you scared? Because in case they don't like
I'm
it,
gonna
like,
I'm going to show one. I'm going to show one and two. And if they don't like it, I'm going to show them The Exorcist again.
So funny. You will watch this Exorcist until you like The Godfather.
Well, or I'll show you Bambi.
Fit, isn't it? Dumper? Fit?
Yeah.
Eddie, you've been a joy and a delight and fascinating. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank Is there anything you would like to tell people to watch or to listen to coming up that you are doing?
Yeah, we've got Back to Black coming out.
Oh, yeah.
April the 12th in the UK, and then May the 8th, I think, in the US, is Back to Black is coming out.
Right.
It's a film about Amy Winehouse. It's a beautiful film. It's a real tribute, and it shows it from her perspective. And I play Mitch, her dad.
Oh, wow.
Which is a fascinating character to play. And
did you meet him?
I met Mitch, yeah. I spent a couple of days with him. And fascinating man. I tell you what, one thing that happened, I have to sing in the film. I have to sing Fly Me to the Moon. And I got Mitch to record Fly Me, because Mitch is a very good singer. So I got Mitch to record Fly Me to the Moon, him singing, so I could copy his voice. And he recorded it for me. And at the end, when he recorded it, he said, anyway, there you go. Love you. And I suddenly realised that I say that to my kids all the time, like when they're going to school or they're going out, love you. And I realised that this is a man whose daughter's no longer with us. Mm. And he's got all this love and he doesn't know where to put it. So he says, love you. And it broke my heart, you know. And it made me realise as a father that that's what you're playing, the essence. You're playing a father. You're playing a man whose daughter is an addict at the same time as being the most famous woman in the world. And how do you deal with that? And you're just a captain, you know. And I thought, well, that's the way to approach this. And also we've got April the 12th, we've got Franklin coming out, which is on Apple, which is a story about Benjamin Franklin. Michael Douglas playing Benjamin Franklin. I played John Adams, the second American president. So I come over to Paris and give him a kick up the arse, basically.
Has Mitch seen the film?
He seen the film? Yeah, I think he has. I don't know if he has. I mean, I haven't seen the completed film yet myself, right, because they're still doing the music to it now.
Have you had this experience of playing someone real who's alive and them seeing
it? Yeah, I played Paul Wolfowitz. I played Bob Dylan. I played Shimon Peres. They're all Jewish. For some reason, they're all Jewish. And I'm not Jewish. But for some reason, I get cast a lot in Jewish roles. I think, to be honest with you, I think it's because a lot of the guys making films, and quite often a lot of the Jewish guys cast me, they make stories about their uncles and their fathers and their grandfathers. And when they hear me speak, and they go, you got my grandfather's voice. And then, I mean, I grew up speaking a little bit of like Yiddish slang, because in the East End, it's all that kind of stuff, you know. And so when they hear me say it, they go, God, that's exactly what my grandfather or my uncle, you know, my Uncle Mo sounded like. And you say, yeah, that's because that's where I come from. So I think that was that's the way it kind of came from that. I mean, Mitch comes from Stepney and I come from Stepney. So when we sat down and talked, it's just like two Stepney boys just sitting talking about life, really.
Have you had the experience of the person you've played seeing the film and then talking to you afterwards about it, or has that not happened?
No, I don't know if Bob Dylan's manager showed him me playing Bob Dylan, I think. But it's a lovely story. It's about, I did this thing called Knocking on Dave's Door, which was off of Sky Arts, and it's about, there's an urban myth that Dave Stewart, the Eurythmics, invited Bob Dylan to Crouch End. Then he went to Crouch Hill or something, and he knocked on the door of this bloke called Dave, and he said, is Dave there? And his woman went, yeah, be back in 20 minutes. And then this plumber called Dave came back. He was played by Paul Risser in the film. And then there's Bob Dylan sitting in his living room, and they watched Countdown all afternoon. Played records.
That's great. Oh, Eddie, I've loved this. Thank you so much for doing this. What a pleasure to meet you and hang out with you.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful death. Send my love to your sort of a wife and to your four children. And if you are going to send me one, just send me at least one of the middle ones. You know what I mean? I don't want the worst one.
Yeah.
Give me one with some hope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What a pleasure. I hope I see you in real life. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Good day. So that was episode 286. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Eddie. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. Don't write about the podcast. No one cares about that. They want to hear about your favourite film and why it means something to you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And my neighbour Maureen fucking loves reading them. Thank you so much to Eddie for giving me his time. Make sure you watch Back to Black when it comes out. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Latham for the photography. And to Will Ferrell and the Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Come and join me next week for another smasher of an episode. Oh, I've got a good one next week. You're going to love it. So I hope you're all well. That is it for now. Thank you for listening. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant.
Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.